Welcome to the Profitable Persuasion Podcast. This is the only podcast you need to learn proven sales and marketing tips and tactics that will help you become a more powerful practitioner of human persuasion and allow you to work less and make more so that you can live a more peaceful and abundant life. And now let's tune in to the revolutionary training by the author, coach, and sales master himself, Steve Clark.
Got a lot to go over this morning, and you probably will find yourself wanting to take notes. That's okay if you want to take notes, but again, you're going to get this as a recording, and you're going to get the complete mind map of this, so you'll have this to refer back to, and you'll have it in front of you.
Court Voorhees.
Okay, Court, go ahead and mute yourself by pressing star six. All right, so we're going to talk this morning about having your best year ever going forward. And I don't know if you want to have your best year ever. It kind of makes common sense that why wouldn't someone want to have their best year ever? But I'm not going to make any assumptions that everyone on this call does, in fact, want to have their best year ever. You may have had your best year ever this year, and if so, congratulations to you, and you may have decided that that's good enough. And if that's where you are, who am I to say any different? But for those of you who really want to make next year your best year ever, I'm going to go over five, if you will, blocks or five components that are going to be necessary and helpful for you to have your best year ever. And each of those five components have subsets of anywhere from 3 to 7 characteristics of each one of those. So we're going to start with each one, and then we'll drill down into each of those components with the subsets. So assuming that you want to have your best year ever, I think there are any number of things that can be worked on, and what I'm going to give you is simply, from my perspective, the disclaimer that I would make here is that there are probably other things that are important or perhaps even necessary if, in fact, you're going to have your best year ever. And I may not cover those in this particular session. I may have left those out. They might not be in evidence as we talk through this. So long story short, that's a good way of me saying, hey, I don't have all the answers. I don't have everything out there that could cover the waterfront. But I think I've got enough here that if you do these things, that you will in fact have your best year ever. So let me give you the five major components that I think are necessary for someone to have their best year ever. The first one would be desire. And we're going to come back and talk about each of these in detail. So the first one would be desire. And these may or may not be in order of importance, but I would certainly say of all the ones I'm going to give you, desire would probably be the number one. But the other four, you could rank order them probably any way that you want to. And just for discussion purposes, I have them listed this way. I have desire number one, beliefs number two, behaviors number three, obstacles number four, and keys for success number five. And again, these are not necessarily in order, with the exception probably of desire. So let's start with desire for a second. And I will share with you that, you know, I coach a lot of sales professionals and owners of small businesses. And there would not be any one of them that would be willing to admit that they are in fact comfortable where they are. And that as much as they might like to improve or increase their income or revenue, none of them would admit that they're unwilling to do what is necessary in order to improve their income or change their results. They would all deny that they are in a comfort zone when confronted with what's going to be necessary to increase their income. So when we look at desire, it sort of takes on a lot of different shades, if you will, and there are different levels of desire. There's a desire that I'd like to make more money, or it would be nice to make more money, or I really am serious about making more money. But none of those I have found really result in a person making more money. The only thing that I have ever found in coaching salespeople or business owners about making more money, the only mindset that I have ever found that gets the job done is what Earl Nightingale called a magnificent obsession. And that's not new. And it's not certainly not unique to sales, and it's not unique to business. I would venture to say that in every high performance endeavor in life, whether it be winning a gold medal in the Olympics or winning seven of them like Michael Phelps did, or winning three Super Bowls like the New England Patriots did, or any other achievement that you can think about, the people who achieve those kinds of results have a magnificent obsession about what they're doing. The same thing can be said of college football or any other endeavor. The reality is there are very few people in business who possess a magnificent obsession for making money. While everybody would say they want to make more money, I would bet you that there are not more than 2 out of 100 people walking the street that want to make money so bad that they would admit that they are obsessed with the idea of making money. And what I will share with you, and what you can glean from yourself if you will read Think and Grow Rich, where Napoleon Hill talks about the starting point of all achievement is having a burning desire, or using the magnificent obsession that Earl Nightingale talked about. The reality is, I don't think you will, and I know I won't, make more money significantly unless it becomes an obsession. Now, if that bothers you and you think there's something wrong with being obsessed about making money, that certainly is your prerogative. But I will also tell you, you ain't going to make more money until you become obsessed about the idea of making more money. As long as something else is more important to you than making money, then money will become a secondary kind of thing. And I can understand, I can hear some of you thinking right now, well, my family comes first, my church comes second, blah, 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 you know, whatever. That's all well and good. But realize that making money doesn't have a conscience. Money is only attracted to people who welcome it and who go about attracting it into their life. Now, money is not everything, but it sure as hell beats most of the things that would come ahead of it. So, yes, it's important to have a good family life. Yes, it's important to have good health and a number of other kinds of things. But until you put money up there close to where those other things are, and it becomes the central focus of your attention daily, you might as well not fool yourself into thinking you're going to make a significant sum of additional money. And I'm not making a character assessment here. I'm not making a value judgment for you. You have to decide for yourself how important making money is. And if it ain't that important, if it's not at least up there with everything else in your life that you consider to be important, if it's not right up there close to what is the number one thing in your life, then you probably aren't ever going to achieve any significant increase in income. Now, to give you a story about this whole concept of having a magnificent obsession or a burning desire, I'll tell you a story about Socrates. And as all of you know, Socrates was a very wise man. And one day, on the shore, there was a young man who was observing Socrates, who was standing in the water about chest deep. And this young man was so enamored and drawn to Socrates and had such great respect and admiration for Socrates that he waded out into the water. And he said to the great one, "Oh, Socrates, I would give anything to be as wise and as knowledgeable as you are." And without saying a word, Socrates grabbed the young man and pushed him underwater, grabbed him by the shoulders, and held him under the water. And the young man thought to himself as he was under the water, "That's a strange reaction to what I just said." And a few seconds passed, and then 15 seconds passed, and then 20 seconds passed, 30 seconds passed, and the young man began to get a little bit concerned about being held under the water that long. And 45 seconds passed, and then a minute passed, and the young man was really, really struggling for all his might to want to come to the surface. And Socrates, the more that young man struggled, the more Socrates held him under the water. And at about a minute and a half, the young man absolutely thought he was going to die. And he was very close to passing out. And Socrates, at the very last minute before the young man passed out, lifted him out of the water and looked at him and said, "When you want to know what I know as badly as you just wanted to live and take another breath, then you will know what I know. But not until." Now, there's a lot to be learned from that lesson, and I would submit to you that until you want to make more money as badly as you want to take another breath, you probably won't make a whole lot more money. Now, another reason that people don't make more money than they currently make is they don't have enough reasons to have to make more money or want to make more money. In other words, the bucket list isn't long enough that you need more money. If you ask most people, "Show me your list of things that require you to make more money." If I were to ask each one of you right now, whip out of your day timer, your wallet, your purse, wherever you keep things that are important to you, whip out your list. Whip out your bucket list. And show me the things on there that require you to make more money and how much more money each of those things require. If I were to ask each one of you to do it, there probably isn't a single one among you who could whip out a list and tell me how much more money you would need to make in order to satisfy or acquire or obtain those things on that list. So a real obstacle to earning more money is most folks don't have enough reasons, or their why is not big enough or strong enough that would require them to make more money. So remember this whole thing about desire. When it's all said and done, comfortable is the enemy of success. Being comfortable is the opposite of being successful. The opposite of being successful is not being a failure. That is not the opposite. The opposite of success is being comfortable. And if you find yourself being real pleased with yourself because you are comfortable, then realize that that's about as good as it's going to get for you, because no achievement is ever achieved until you get pissed off about your current level and where you are. It doesn't matter if you want to lose weight, win more football games, make more money, improve your health. None of that makes any difference until you get disgusted with your current situation and you can no longer live without obtaining whatever it is that is the object of your desire. So let's go to number two for a second. If you desire to have the best year you've ever had going, you know, next year, then there are some beliefs that are supportive and there are some beliefs that are counter to your being successful. So if you are going to achieve anything more significant than what you've currently achieved in your life, there has to be some belief, number one, that it is doable, that it is possible. And not only do you have to believe that it is possible to do, you have to believe it is possible for you to do it. It's easy to believe sometimes that other people can do something that we ourselves don't think we can do. But the reality is, until you believe that you can do it, not a whole lot is going to happen. Another belief that has to be developed is this, what I call an attitude of I can. Interestingly enough, when I coach people, and it doesn't seem to matter whether these are rookie salespeople or managers or owners that have been around business for a couple decades, it's very interesting when I suggest something to them that goes against their belief system or makes them uncomfortable. What they will do is they will begin to defend and justify their position by telling me why it won't work. And the question I always ask them is, why are you telling yourself it won't work? Why don't you tell yourself, instead of saying it won't work, or instead of saying I can't do it, why don't you change your language and start saying, how am I going to make this work? Instead of assuming and saying flat out it will not work. But yet you listen to people, you listen to their language. You don't have to listen very long to hear anybody say and tell you why something won't work. And of course, what you confess out of your mouth becomes your reality. If you don't think it will work, you're absolutely right. So you must, if you're going to significantly improve your income and your sales revenues, you must begin to look at every situation. And instead of saying to yourself, it won't work or I can't do it, start asking yourself, how can I crack that nut? How can I make that work for me? I can do this. This is doable. I hadn't figured it out yet, but I can do it. Most of you probably are not aware or know who Dan Millman is, but Dan Millman is a former world champion trampoline performer. And he won the world championship back in the early 60s as a college student at UC Berkeley. He's written a number of books, The Way of the Peaceful Warrior, and he is now 63 years old. And I heard an interview with him the other day in which he said, when he turned 60, he said, I didn't mind turning 60. He said, but it bothered me a lot to turn 60 and not be able to ride a unicycle. He said, so I borrowed a friend's unicycle. And he said, I don't know how many of you have ever tried to ride a unicycle, but that thing will get away from you in a hurry. He said, so I got the unicycle and I went to a tennis court that has a chain link fence all around it. And I went when people weren't playing tennis and I got on the unicycle and I had a death grip on the chain link fence. And he said, every day I would hold on to the chain link fence and try to stay on the unicycle. And he said, every single day for 3 weeks, I would go and spend 20 to 30 minutes trying to ride this unicycle. And he said there were some women that walked in the neighborhood at the same time. And he said after about a week, they begin to feel sorry for him. And they begin to say things to him about what a difficult task it was. And perhaps he was trying to do the impossible. And he said, I didn't listen to them. I continued. And he said, day after day after day, I would work on it. And I would get maybe 2 pedals or 3 pedals or 4 pedals or so forth. And he said, I knew I could figure it out if I just kept at it. If I just kept working on it and kept working on it and kept working on it. He said, so every day. He said, and after about 2 months of working on it every single day, he said, I was finally able to let go of the chain link fence. And he said, now I can ride a unicycle and do figure eights on the tennis court at age 63. The point there being that no, he couldn't do it 2 months earlier. There was no way he could do it. And if he allowed himself to think he couldn't do it, he would have never put forth the effort that allowed him to do that. So my question to each one of you is, what things do you assume you can't do and have sold yourself on the fact you can't do them and yet have given up trying when in fact they will work if you just put forth the effort? So there has to become, if you're going to have your best year ever, you've got to develop a belief that you can have your best year ever. This economy be damned. It doesn't matter. You can have your best year ever. On the other hand, if you lack that belief, then you are absolutely right. So in addition to having belief in self and having a can-do attitude, you have to have a belief in your product, what you sell, and in your company and the price you charge for what you sell. If you lack belief in those things, then you might as well stay at home, because the people you talk to are going to figure out you don't believe in what you're selling or what you're doing, and it will come across very clearly to them. You must have a belief in your marketplace, that people in your marketplace that you sell in will buy the things that you sell. Most of you know I live right outside of Pensacola, Florida, in the panhandle of Florida, and the population of Pensacola is 60,000 people. Well, I've trained a number of salespeople in this area who use the excuse, or what Zig Ziglar would call the loser's limp. And they say things to me like, you know, there ain't no money in Pensacola. There ain't nothing but a bunch of military and retirees. Now, if I live down in Tampa where the big money is, I could really do well. The reality is they wouldn't do any better down there than they do here, because it's not about the marketplace. It's about what goes on between your ears. So if you're going to be successful, you must have belief in your marketplace. If you don't have belief in your marketplace, not a whole lot's going to happen. So those are beliefs that one must have in order to go to the next level and have your best year.
Thank you for listening to the Profitable Persuasion Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. Your next step is to go to newschoolselling.com/2-minute trainer and download your free 2-minute sales training manual. We've prepared 10 sales training tips that will drastically improve your game in less than 2 minutes. Get it today at newschoolselling.com/2-minute trainer. Finally, be sure to subscribe to the podcast and leave us a review. We look forward to hearing from you. Wishing you all the success you have the guts to claim, we'll see you on the next episode of the Profitable Persuasion Podcast.